Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Exxaro FD pre-close. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mzila Mthenjane. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our FD's pre-close, looking at the 6 month period to 30th June 2021. My name is Mzila Mthenjane, Executive Head for Stakeholder Affairs. I am joined by our team. We'll be led this afternoon by our FD, Riaan Koppeschaar, and he'll be joined by Dr. Nombasa Tsengwa, MD for Minerals and CEO Designate. And our CEO, Mr. Nkosi Mgojo, is also on this virtual table, as well as our MD for our renewables energy business, who you would have met at the year-end results, Mr. Roland Tatnall. And we also have the coal team, as per usual, in the form of Sakkie Swanepoel, who looks after our logistics and marketing, as well as Malice Walker, who looks after finances for the coal team. And we do have some of our other colleagues on the sustainability side in terms of Mongezi Veti, to the extent that there may be any detailed questions or discussion around COVID and what Exxaro is doing in that regard. So with that intro, let me hand over to Riaan, and he will then take us through the salient points of the FD's pre-close. Riaan, over to you.
Thanks, Mzila. Good afternoon, ladies and gents. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. How we will conduct the meeting, I will give you a quick overview on health and safety, as well as also the performance of the Cennergi business and certain of our strategic initiatives. I will then hand over to Nombasa and the coal team that will give you a bit of guidance on coal, including the production, the CapEx, and the market outlook. So firstly, on the health and safety side, that remains a priority for Exxaro. So in line with what we've seen in the rest of the country, we've also seen an uptick in the COVID cases at our operations, which obviously is a concern for us. So we remain committed in our fight to prevent loss of life. We continue to implement the measures in line with the government regulations, and at the moment, COVID is receiving a big focus in the organization. So if we look at, we've also very proud that we've successfully vaccinated all our healthcare workers at our facilities, and we've also commenced with the vaccination of employees over the age of 60 years. Then at Grootegeluk and Matla, the occupational health centers have now been registered and are approved as primary vaccination sites with the National Department of Health. So a very good outcome on that front for us. Then, very importantly, safety. We're proud that we've now been 51 months without a work-related fatality, and our lost time injury frequency rate is trending at our target level of 0.08, but still worse than the 0.05 that we reported in 2020. On the production side, just a highlight, you would have seen the production and sales 9% and 11% lower compared to the corresponding period. And the main theme there is poor performance, unfortunately, from Transnet, as well as also in the first quarter of the year, following the Christmas break, we've been impacted by adverse weather conditions and also the impact of COVID as people came back from the holiday break. On the CapEx front, a 39% reduction we're forecasting for the first half of the year compared to the second half of last year, due to the timing in the sustaining capex, also some of the projects nearing completion, offset to some extent by some of the GG6 expansion capital rolling over from from last year. Synergy. So the electricity generation at Amakhala is expected to be in line with what we planned, but the equipment availability and capacity factors we forecast to be slightly lower than planned due to the routine 5-yearly maintenance inspections that took place during the first half of the year. That will not repeat in the second half of the year. At Tsitsikamma, there we expect electricity generation to be slightly lower due to lower wind conditions. Normally, the wind conditions are better in the second half of the year. On the equipment availability and capacity factors, again, forecast to be slightly lower than planned, also due to the warranty inspections that I alluded to earlier on. So on the strategic front, you're all aware we've completed the sales program for our Tronox shares, and our board has also implemented a 1.5 billion share repurchase program. That program is actually progressing very well, and we again received shareholder approval at the end of May to continue with the program. So we forecast that by the middle of August we should be substantially complete with the program. We also successfully refinanced our 8 billion term loan. That facility will start to mature during the current financial year, and the refinancing has successfully been concluded at the very attractive terms. On the disposal front, on ECC, we've made good progress. We've now also received Competition Commission approval, and now we're still waiting for the last approval, which is the DMR Section 11 approval. On Leeuwpan, that sales process is continuing, and we are hopeful to be able to conclude the transaction during the second half of this year. So with that, I think that is a broad overview of where we currently stand. I'll hand over to Nombasa and the coal team to give you a bit more insight into the coal numbers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kopis, and good afternoon, ladies and gents. Happy to share the numbers from the coal business with you this afternoon. What I will request, after I've spoken, I'll ask Melis Walker to come in and share with us on the CAPEX numbers. Then I will ask Saki to give us the outlook of the market. And then I'll hand over as well to Joseph Machila, who looks after our safety, health and environment or area, to talk to us how we are dealing with COVID-19, particularly the uptick we see in as far as the third wave. Firstly, let me share with you that we continue to be challenged by COVID-19 at our operation. As our teams are operating at full capacity, we have not had any incidents where we had to shut down our operations across the two areas, whether you look at Limpopo or in Mpumalanga. As I think Gopis has mentioned, we are picking up the impacts of COVID-19 wave number 3, especially at our GG operations, to the extent that we do see an impact in our capacity in as far as the availability of our operators there, even though it's not at alarming levels at the moment. Suffice to say that we're very happy to have started training our employees in advance, starting from last year, obviously on top of what we've been doing over many years, trying to multi-skill our employees so that you know, at least our primary mining equipment is manned as a matter of priority as we go to secondary and tertiary equipment on the mine. And this strategy has really worked very well for us, that we really have not seen an impact on production at this stage. However, it will be important for Dr. Majila to come in and share exactly how this is managed in the organization. And we continue to benefit quite well from the two test labs in the Waterberg and at Matla, which has enabled us to conduct NEF testing, which is mandatory for employees, especially during high-risk periods. For instance, when employees come back from holidays like we did in January, post-Easter periods, or when employees are returning from long layoff periods post-shift cycles. So we do really benefit quite a lot from these facilities that we established. Now, looking at the numbers, and I'll really stick to the highlights, because there are not many, many drivers that are impacting our numbers. So if you look at the table on production, you can see that we expect 11% lower numbers or volumes compared to the second half of 2020. The biggest contributor for this has been TFR performance, which we mentioned to you in March. This has had a negative impact at all our exporting mines, whether you're looking at Flotakalek, at Leopan, Belfast, ECC, and also at Mafube, resulting in full stockpiles negatively impacting our production. In addition to this big TFR impact, we have also experienced other impacts, such as irregular rains, which we experienced in the first quarter at Flotakalek, and the NEF testing I mentioned, where we had to take out employees off their workplaces so that they can all be tested. This was post the December holidays and also post the April holidays. Also, we have had low domestic demand at Leopan, putting more pressure to the already full stockpiles, while the Eskom contracts also remained unfinalized for Leopan and ECC, which to some extent does have an impact on how much you would want to push production. We've also experienced bad geological conditions at Matla, at Mine 2 and Mine 3, and we've talked about pit room challenges that we continue to experience at Matla, for as long as we have not sunk that shaft at Mine 1. We've also experienced at ECC some geological impacts at our Doosfontein West underground operations, and also our pit 2 at the Doosfontein East did come to an end. Lastly, yes, we have had some COVID-related impacts, which I've already mentioned, but also some individuals who had to isolate away from our operations, which did have, to some extent, some impact. But if you look, move on now to the sales numbers, as Gopis has said, we expect 9% dip in our numbers, and this is due to what I've already mentioned, mainly the TFR impact. And you will see this impact showing a 31% a dip in our export volumes. And also we have some interesting recovery, though, which is an offset somewhat in the domestic markets due to the post-hard lockdown recovery of the markets that we've seen, especially the Cape market going into the first year, or sorry, the first quarter of this year. At GG, you will see that 1% less in terms of our volumes. This is really due to the high energy value in the coal that we've delivered to those two power stations. Overall, we, however, expect other domestic sales to end up 17% higher, and this is due to the fact that we've diverted our ECC export tons to the domestic market. Obviously, we don't know how now the Wave 3 is going to further impact the domestic market, given the restrictions that we know are going to be impacting, which obviously now we will have to report that when we come back during the results announcements. I've already mentioned the pit room challenges at Matla, which have impacted on our sales. And maybe lastly, something worth mentioning has been just the way Leeuwpan has been hit so hard from the low demand from the domestic market, especially now the RB product, which we could not export. And is impacted because even the DAF market is not, we're not seeing any demand in that regard. Once again, in summary, we really experience big challenges, everybody in the market and in the industry as far as the TFR impact is concerned. Some of the domestic impacts we've seen, especially at Leeuwpan. I know that we had mentioned in March, what we thought the impact of TFR would be on our numbers. We gave you an amount of 2 million tons, which we said would probably be what we would face as at risk at the end of 2021. We still maintain that number. We do see some recovery of TFR's performance in Mpumalanga. And we wouldn't want to give you any revised number at this stage. We'd look at what happens there and also post the shut in July of TFR. And then we will, in August, when we announce our interims, share with you what we think that number, that 2 million tons that we spoke about, that is at risk, will look like. And we really want to invite you to pay attention to the media announcements from TFR. They are beginning to share what their challenges are. They've been talking about the level of cable theft, which they're experiencing on the line, vandalism, and also some of the power outages that we've all experienced. And they're talking more about that, and it would be useful if you can really engage TFR in terms of their confidence in making sure that we do recover from these challenges, including availability of locomotives that have really also been impacting their performance. So at this stage, I want to invite Melis to talk to us about CAPEX, followed by Saki, looking at the outlook, markets, and Joe Majila afterwards talking about how we're dealing with the third wave impacts at Grootegeluk. Over to you, Mel.
Thank you, Nombasa. Good afternoon, everybody. Just looking at CAPEX, if you look at the two halves against each other, a reduction of 700 million. A lot of that is related to timing, especially at Gigi. If you see that in the second half, we're going to be spending on sustaining CAPEX, 1 billion rand compared to the 500 we spent in the first half. On the Mpumalanga side, it's definitely related to optimization, specifically if you look at sustaining. And then DCM West Underground on the Mpumalanga side, also looking at phasing that based on the market constraints and TFR challenges that Mombasa has mentioned earlier. If we then look at the two years against each other, if we look at what we gave as guidance in March at 3.3 billion, looking at dropping that by about 300 million for this year, you can see that even on the Waterberg side, there's optimization where we're dropping on the sustaining side by 200 million and a little bit at Mpumalanga at 50. And then you can see the little bit of timing that we're looking at on the GG6 side where between the two halves, the consecutive halves, there's a slight increase on the two halves, and we're looking at a slight increase there of about 40 million on the current year's guidance compared to what we talked about in March. So really looking at optimization, this is a continuing theme that we have in our business, specifically on the sustaining side. And as you can see, on the expansion side really coming to an end with some of the last ECC expansion being completed and then the GG6 being completed in the second half of this year with the ramp up in first half next year. Thank you.
Saki?
Thank you, Nombasa. Good morning to everybody on the call. Good afternoon. I think if we can start maybe on the international market front, the first quarter of the year that was below the first quarter internationally in terms of thermal seaborne coal compared to 2020, which then we compare against a 3 months before COVID, really. But then for the second quarter internationally, quarter of higher volumes compared to 2020, because we're on the up now, and then we were very much in the midst of the COVID-19 effects. So generally looking a bit better internationally in the work, we are ticking up. Volumes have definitely recovered in general to above 2020 levels, but not yet to 2019 levels. I would say we're probably about halfway between the two different levels. In our market, generally good demand. We do not sit with a problem of demand in our thermal coal markets. In fact, we see some areas in the world where demand is much stronger than what we experienced historically, driven by a few factors. I think firstly, driven by the fact that in Northeast Asia, you sit with quite a hot summer, and you sit with quite a shortage of supply to the Japan, Korea, Taiwan type market. Very good demand there, and a bit short in that space of the world. Equally so in Europe, with gas fairly in short supply and prices also increasing, Europe was actually burning so far this year much more coal than they've done on a comparative basis. And for the rest of the year, we do expect Europe to burn a good amount of coal as well. Renewables not performing as well, and as I said, gas not so available as in previous years. So we do foresee that Europe will hold up in this situation. In our own home markets, let's say East Africa, Middle East, Pakistan, India, African islands, we do see very good demand. We have seen a bit of a knock on demand from India, very much driven by COVID-19 effects on that economy and a lot of provincial lockdown closures as well, and specifically in the sponge iron market, where South Africa is a key competitor, heavily impacted by high raw material pricing, the lack of oxygen, because oxygen was reserved for hospitals, but also at some stage a bit of a demand issue on the sponge iron side. But generally not looking bad, and I think for the past 3 months, see a good recovery in demand from India, even though it's not back to the normal levels that we experience from South Africa. We had quite a bit of supply knocks in the 6 month period from both Colombia, from Indonesia and Australia, and this fairly upbeat demand side with impacts on supply has then generally supported prices to the levels that we have witnessed year to date. Our view on pricing is that potentially we can see fairly robust pricing towards year end. We do not see prices just falling off the cliff, and we would think at least quarter three will still see us in a fairly strong price environment. So generally, internationally, we as a supplier into the market see good demand, we see very good pricing. Unfortunately, as Nombasa has said, we do not see the logistics currently to support the South African export drive into this very ideal export situation for the country, and it is actually very sad that the country is losing out on this boom in the commodity market with regards to coal. If we then turn back to the domestic market on the Eskom side, and Mombasa have talked to that, so no big issues there. On the ArcelorMittal side, our metallurgical customers, generally good demand, again heavily impacted even in the domestic market by TFR from a logistics perspective, where we had seen that customers had no choice other than to truck coal up from our Grote Geluk mine in Limpopo down to wherever their plants are. So definitely not an optimal solution, but the only solution they had, and also definitely impacting then on the offtake. In the rest of the domestic market, stable demand, as we've said before, it's a fairly stagnant market, stable demand, but again, very much impacted by logistics and a lot of road transport that had to be put in place to try and get past the logistics problem. We also do see an impact in the domestic market in terms of definitely a higher supply of product, or specifically your unsized product, because Eskom still have quite a bit of coal, and you do not have the logistics to export the unsized product. So we do see a very soft market domestically in the unsized space, and we definitely see additional supply on the sized space as suppliers are starting to supply into that market. But generally, from an Exxaro perspective, markets are treating us well. Good demand, fair pricing to very good pricing. Our big problem is logistics to get the coal out. In this regard, we are pushing all avenues, other than Richards Bay as well, to export product. And we go through every other port that is available to us, and also we go through every other player in the business that can take product from us to sell through their capacity that they may have spare where we do not have spare capacity. So we definitely trying to push as hard as possible to still move our volumes, but as Nombasa indicated, it is not something we will be able to recover from towards year end, and there will definitely be an impact on our volumes. But generally, from a market perspective, we cannot complain, a good place to compete in. Thank you, Nombasa.
Thank you, Sati. We move over to COVID-19. Joseph?
Thank you. Thank you, Nombasa, and good day to everyone. Can you hear me?
Perfectly, Joe.
Thank you so much. So in terms of of COVID, our first response to COVID, which is our response lever, talks to the preventative measures that everybody is implementing, where we have robust measures in place within our operations for masking, social distancing, sanitizing, and management of potential infections of the colleagues. Those measures we have been implementing since the onset of the pandemic, and they are working quite well. Second to that is the screening of daily screening of the workforce, which we have moved onto a digital platform. So every day, the entire workforce is reminded on the need to screen so that they can identify where there is a risk. It's done through our Let's Connect platform, and it is working well. Then the third part of our COVID response is compliance management in terms of the codes of practice that are mandatory at all of our operations in terms of the number of people in vehicles, the working areas. Those are in place and are being audited on a regular basis. We have beefed up our compliance capabilities in this space through our COVID inspectorate, which we commenced with last year already, and our in-house SHE inspectors. We're using this in particularly where we have an area where we feel there could have been employees that are infected. We go back and enforce the compliance requirements that we have put in place in this area. So that's the first journey that we have commenced. It's working well for us. We're able to manage the infection rate of our employees, which is if you do a reflection on where we are in terms of our infections versus the prevailing infection rate, we're still trending below the national infection rate, notwithstanding the third wave that we are going through. Then the second part is our diagnostic leg of management of COVID risks. We have instituted quite a robust diagnostic program. As mentioned earlier on, we have developed in-house capabilities of conducting the PCR, which is the WHO-approved confirmatory test, but we have improved onto that, optimized it through the antigen testing, which is a screening tool that we started this year. It has worked quite well. So we screen employees, and we are able to eliminate those individuals that are negative. If you are suspect through the antigen testing, then we put you through the PCR test. We are testing much, much more robustly than what we believe is happening out there, because we don't test on symptoms, but we test on risks that we believe you could be presenting. So one of the measures that has been implemented, if you've been off the operations for more than 5 days, we test. You know, people that go on a rest and recovery program, we test. And it is part of the reasons why we are able to arrest the possibility of a risk at our operations at the gate. So this program is run at all of our operations, and we are, it's pretty much a continuation of the mass testing campaign that we started off in the second wave. And we're picking up a substantial number of infected employees actually through this before they enter the mine, which then helps us to manage this risk for the operations. We further improve the surveillance capabilities with the labs that we have. You'd recall our labs have now been approved for public testing. So one of the measures that we are implementing is not to do surveillance at the mine gate through the PCR testing, but we are extending the surveillance to the household level of our employees. So we've opened up the testing protocols to test the next of kin or family members of our employees should they suspect that there is a risk. That way we are able to safeguard our employees even at the household level. So that is one of the measures that we are doing. Then the second bit is the management of cases when they do arise. All of the cases that have been identified, they're taken through our management protocols of all of the infected people, where we provide facilities for isolation. If you opt for self-isolation at home, all of our employees that are infected are provided with oximeters, which is a device that helps us identify if the condition is deteriorating. We've also commissioned a 24-hour call center that allows us to check and monitor people 24 hours in a day. And if a person is now deteriorating to an extent that they need to get into hospital, we then dispatch an ambulance and we then take them to hospital. That has given us a visibility of a risk of that employees could be facing when they are infected. Over and above that, it's a normal treatment that is done clinically through our occupational health centers and the provision of supplements to the colleagues that could have been infected. If I can move on, over and above the preventative and the management of the COVID cases, we have commenced with the vaccine rollout as per the government guidelines. The first part of the vaccine rollout program has been the requirement to register our health professionals, train them on vaccine inoculation program, as well as inoculate them and registration of our centers to be inoculation centers. We're glad to inform you that we have now completed phase 1A of the vaccine rollout program. What does this mean? It means that all of our centers have been registered, all of our healthcare professionals have been trained, and all of our healthcare professionals have been vaccinated, which then safeguards the necessary capabilities that we need to go through the pandemic. The second part of the vaccine rollout has been the vaccination of the over 60s. That has commenced, and by tomorrow we would have gone past the 50% of the 640 over 60 employees that are in that category. You know, as part of the rollout program, as of the 1st of July, the system has now been opened up for the over 50s. We've commenced with the bulk loading of our employees onto the EVDS, which is a platform that the department has opened up for us to register people and so that they can be vaccinated. So we are quite happy to announce that we are progressing quite well in the phases of the vaccine. And the third bit that I wanted to inform you is that we've also been allowed to acquire vaccines as a private entity and inoculate. We have been given approval for two of our occupational health center, which is the Mata Occupational Center and the Grootegeluk Occupational Health Center, and we have been given the permits to inoculate employees. We are now in the process of acquiring the vaccines so that we can support the government rollout program with our own rollout program within Exaro. And that work is where we are now in terms of the vaccine rollout. So in summary, it is our response to the third wave through our screening and testing and management of infected employees. But parallel to that is the execution of the vaccine rollout. Phase one, which is the healthcare workers. Phase two, which is the over 60s. And the commencement of the third phase, which is the over 50. And those processes are running quite smoothly. Thank you, Dr. Sema.
Thank you, Joe. That was Dr. Machila, who just shared with us what we are doing as far as responding to COVID-19. Over back to you, Mzila.
Thank you very much, Nombasa, and to the team for that excellent delivery. I think we're now ready for Q&A. And if I can ask the operator to just help facilitate the questions and then just explain to the audience the manner in which they can pose their questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if anyone would like to ask a question, you are welcome to press star and then one on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you, however, wish to withdraw the question, you may press star and then two to remove yourself from the question queue. If anyone would like to ask a question, you are welcome to press star and then one. Our first question is from Patrick Mann of Bank of America.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you very much for the call and the opportunity to ask a question. Can you just tell us a little bit more about how Transnet's performance is developing? So you did say it seems to be getting slightly better, but, you know, has it been consistently poor performance, or have you seen kind of concentration where maybe, you know, I think you've given average number of trains of five from GG and kind of, I think it was 14.9 out of Mpumalanga. I mean, has it been fairly consistently low levels, or have you kind of gone a few weeks where it's been a disaster and then come back to relatively high levels, just so we can get an idea of, you know, sure, how it's playing out and what to watch for. Thanks.
Sadie?
Patrick, thank you for the question. Yeah, I think I have to split the answer into two. The one, if I can deal with the Waterberg first, our Grootegeluk mine logistics to Richards Bay. There, I think we have seen the low level of performance really throughout the year, at consistently at the low level, and we are really battling there to get to the higher levels, and we do not yet see an uptick in that performance. So I think that one, a major focus area for us, still. On the Mpumalanga side, where we have our other export mines, we equally have seen a very poor quarter one. And remember, we actually had in January another shut, which this year in 2021 is quite unique, that we actually have two shutdowns on the coal line. So apart from the shut, we have really seen a very poor performance thereafter. And actually during that period of the shut, Transnet had quite a lot of damage in terms of cable theft as well as vandalism of equipment. And that on top of the general problem on the coal line of the poor availability and maintenance of locomotives for the export line. Lately what we've seen in Mpumalanga is we've seen that TFR has had some successes in apprehending cable thieves, so we definitely start to see small successes there, and we could see in the past 2 weeks a bit of a better performance in Mpumalanga, not remotely where we should be, but a bit of a better performance. And I would say from the very, very poor first quarter we had in Mpumalanga, we have improved a bit year to date in Mpumalanga. So I think two parts to that answer, Patrick.
Thanks. And then maybe if I could just ask a quick follow-up. I mean, how long do you think this poor performance could carry on for? I mean, do you see a route out of this? So, you know, maybe 2021 is a really bad year, but, you know, you think, expect that you should be back to 2020 to kind of decent levels by 2022? Or do you think that this is kind of an open-ended problem at this point and it's too difficult to tell, you know, how this gets resolved?
Yeah, and I think I would really encourage everyone on the call to also have this direct discussion with TFR so that they can talk about their own business. But just from our side, talking about the public domain information that TFR has shared with the industry, again, I think we need to understand the current problem in two elements. The first one is the restoration of operational capacity, which is largely dependent on TFR's ability to bring their locomotive fleet on the export line back to its full contingent where it should be. And I think there's enough information in the media as to what the drivers of that situation is. But the information that we got from TFR is that they hope to be able to restore that capacity towards the end of quarter three and probably then during quarter four. So the first part of the answer, I think, Patrick, is we are quite hopeful that the poor locomotive availability, the operational capacity restoration should largely happen in 2021. The other part to that answer is then of course the security issue, where we do see vandalism, we do see community unrest related issues, and we see a lot of cable theft really paralyzing the system at times where there are sometimes 2-3 days that you do not move a train from a specific mine. Now, I think this is the longer-term, bigger problem that we have, because I think we all do understand that the socioeconomic realities of South Africa is not going to change overnight. So there's definitely a bigger effort, not just by Transnet, but I would believe also at the national level, to look at the effect and the impact of this on the rail line and to really start to make progress in terms of the security side of the export line to improve that. And that one is very difficult to answer as to how long that might take to really bring that back to a situation of normality. So I think from a risk perspective, that really is where the risk is. But look, we from our side remain hopeful that at least over the next remainder of this year and let's say into the first half of next year, hopefully we can make good progress on that side as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Swati. Just to emphasize a point that there are a lot of interactions across the industry at different levels, whether you look at the Minerals Council, is engaging at the highest level in the country, political levels, you know, chairman to chairman, CEO to CEO conversations going on. So the pressure is on onto TFR, and I think there is an awareness of the challenge and the impact it's causing to the entire economy. and we're getting assurances across the board that this is a biggest priority for the government and the SOE, just to add.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Tim Clark of SBG Securities.
Thank you very much. I hope you can hear me. I guess the corollary to Patrick's question is what should we think about in terms of costs for some of these operations? Because, you know, the export operations are going to be losing economies of scale in a very significant way. And I wonder if you could just give us a little bit of a sort of headline of maybe the fixed cost element, or how we should think about fixed costs, or how we should adjust our costs for these lost export production levels. Thank you.
Melissa, I'm going to set you up first, and maybe Gopis could add later.
Yeah, thanks, Lombosa. Tim, yeah, thank you. That's a reality as we're starting to see, the economies of scale dropping away, especially in Mpumalanga, where we have the higher cost operations. We are seeing pressure on the rand per ton numbers. At GG, not so much. They're able to keep their volumes up, and obviously the export portion is a much smaller part of the business. I think that when we do half year results in August, you know, we'll be able to give you a much clearer idea of what we see for this year, but there is pressure on the rand per ton. It's indicated in our guidance as well. But to try and quantify it for you on FD's pre-close, I think is premature before we close off. But definitely we are seeing pressure on all the exporting operations. Thanks.
Can I press it a little bit and just say that for the Mpumalanga mines, should we be thinking 60% fixed costs or 50% fixed costs? Just a high level fixed versus variable.
Yeah, high level will be higher than the 50, so probably 60. 60%, 65% is probably a good start at that calculation.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Gopis, do you have anything to add in terms of other initiatives?
Thanks, Nombasa. So cost is receiving a big attention in the organization at the moment. So we are looking at the head office, all the operations, you know, to try and squeeze out costs. So definitely actions to try and cushion the impact that we have on the unit production cost. So those initiatives are ongoing. To squeeze out, especially on external costs, consultant spend, etc., to get savings on that front.
Thanks.
Our next question is from Yandre Pieterse of Resco.
Thanks so much for taking my question. You mentioned there was some pressure in terms of the discounts being received domestically. I was wondering if you could please just elaborate a little bit on, or add some color on, the discounts you're currently seeing.
Saki, are you there?
Yeah, can I just confirm, is it Yandre?
Yes, it's Yandre. That's perfect. Thank you.
Okay, Yandre. Yeah, I think you will appreciate that in these discussions, we do not discuss specific pricing issues. Not in a FD pre-close, and definitely also not in a results presentation, as these matters are, of course, very sensitive from a Competition Commission perspective. But just maybe to give an overall answer, it is not as if we see pricing collapse in the domestic market, but with the stagnant demand and the higher supply of product, there is pressure on pricing, but it's not a collapse of price, if I can give you a round answer like that.
That's perfect. Thanks so much.
Our next question is from Lisa Steyn of Business Day.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Perfectly, Lisa.
Hi. I just want to find out, how should we think about the sort of lost opportunity from TFR If it's 2 million tons and the average is $95 per ton, is that the sort of calculation we can make in terms of revenue that could have been made that is now lost? Or how should one think about it? Because, of course, you are also diverting it into the local market. Thanks.
Nombasa, just want to check, you want Melis or I to, yeah, to deal with this one?
Yeah, Melis could deal with it. Gopis could deal with it as well. Gopis, do you want to give it a try? It's a straightforward calculation.
Yeah, so I think, Lisa, the principle the principle that you outline is correct. You know, it's 2 million tons times the export price times the exchange rate. You know, so obviously the 95, all the product that we're exporting is now not API4. It's a lower grade coal, some of it. So probably that 95 must be lower, but more or less the calculation in lost revenue that you high level quoted is correct.
Okay.
So I think you want to add in terms of, I mean, I think Gopis is correct. I mean, you cannot just draw a straight line because we are not exporting one grade, which is RB1. So it would have to be, a proportionate calculation.
Yeah, and I think a good guidance there will be from our, if you were to look at our results presentation from March,
yeah,
you will have seen that we gave guidance on what a typical mix may look into the future. So if you were to use that mix, you will be well guided.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Thabang Tlaku of SBG Securities.
Hi, good morning everyone, or good afternoon. Nombasa, I know you said that you can't, you're not willing to sort of change guidance on lost exports for the year from 2 million tons. But if I look at this half alone, you guys are coming in 1.5 million tons or just under 1.5 million tons below a half year sort of guided number. Is it realistic to expect Transnet to recover that 1 million in the second half given the circumstances? And then my second question is to Sagi. Can you just give us a high level view of what sort of discounts you're seeing to RB1 in terms of your portfolio of exports, or at least for this first half. So not particularly looking for actual qualities, but just an average sort of discount to the RB1 price. Thanks.
Sagi, you can take all of that. It's in your space, eh?
Thank you, Nombasa. Thanks for the question, Thabang. Yeah, I think on the TFR side, catch up will be extremely challenging. In fact, I think we must accept that catch up will not happen. The bigger challenge from here on will be to what extent can we deliver what we've committed to deliver. That will be, and not fall behind that much further into the year. So no, I don't think we will see catch up, and in my view we will see a minimum of that 2 million tons not being exported come year in. As I've said earlier, we of course are pushing a lot of other avenues to still evacuate the coal, even though it won't reflect in our own export number in RBCT. And as we indicated that come August after the results presentation, one should be able to give a bit more color around that one. I think on the discounts, Thabang, again, not speaking to specific discounts on specific products, but fair to say that discounts on the subgrades have widened. What we do see in the market is it's driven by a few factors. The one is just the just the average high level of the main indices on the 6,000 level, and it's not just in South Africa. Even your API 6, your Australian 6,000 index, is very high, and in fact, for the past few weeks, is even higher than South Africa due to that tightness in the Pacific. But as you see the main indices running up, your industries that use the subgrade coals do come under a lot of pressure from a financial viability perspective, and you will start to see them stepping back from the market until discounts have widened a bit so that it can become worth their while, because you calculate the price of the main index with the discount. What we also do see is that with Indonesia being a very big player in that market, whether it's South Africa or Australia, you always have Indonesia there in the background against who you must compete, specifically in the market like India, where Indonesia is supplying at least 40% of the Indian import demand. So when the indices run up, you will see a widening of the discounts on the subgrade, also to remain competitive with the alternative. And definitely what we see in the first half of the year was that discounts have widened on the subgrades from what we've seen at the previous, both previous year this period as well as the second half of the previous period, because the index is so high. So in general, we still get better money for our coal, but you don't see the full follow through of the increase index in your subgrades due to the widening discount.
Thanks, Taki.
Ladies and gentlemen, just another reminder, if anyone else would like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. We have a question from Rowan Gola of Kernex Research.
Afternoon all, and thanks for the call. Two questions from my side. The first was on the vaccination program. You mentioned that government's given you the license or the approval to do that. Mean you can procure and vaccinate independent of the government program, or are you still linked to that somehow?
Joseph, are you there?
Sorry, a non-call question. I caught you by surprise.
That was question one.
Yeah, that was question one. The second one would be on Synergy. The 100 megawatt cap, you know, that allows a company like Synergy, you know, really probably to step up a gear or two. And I'm sure it must have, you know, sites available and ready to go. Can you just talk about opportunities for Synergy, A, for internal generation, but B, to offer, you know, large utility sized generation projects to industry, the private sector in South Africa?
Start with you, Joseph, quickly on the vaccines, and then Roland.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Namasa. So the government permission that we got is to support the government rollout program through the two pre-approved labs and the two pre-approved the health facilities at MATA and GG. So the approval is twofold. It's an approval for us to acquire the vaccines, approval of the distributors that have been vetted by the government. And the third part of it is that once we have vaccinated, the costs that are associated with the acquisition of the vaccine is recoverable from the medical aid of the individuals that we would have vaccinated that are insured with medical aid, and recoverable from the state where people are dependent on the public health system. So approval to vaccinate, approval of the facilities to go through vaccination, and also the commitment that we, once we have acquired and vaccinated individuals, the process of recovering that cost, because it's a cost that ordinarily should be borne by the medical aid or the public health system.
Okay, thanks. That means you can't go and procure vaccines on your own. You're still bound to go through government procurement channels. Is that correct?
We are bound by the pre-approved procurement, pre-approved suppliers of government. We are also bound to do the compliance. So you are acquiring these things through approved facilities that have got the same rights as a dispensary.
Okay, thank you.
And that those permits we have. We have a permit for the MATA and a permit for GG.
Okay,
Thank you very much. I think Roland, please.
Thanks, Ambassador. Thanks for the question, Ron. So, yeah, the first part of the question, the raise of the threshold from 1 megawatt to 100 megawatts, we had to wait and see what's gazetted in a month or so's time to exactly how it will work. But, yeah, in principle, it could have a profound effect on the way that we're looking at the market and the ability of private sector to offer generation or electricity solutions to the private sector. So just as an example, we announced back in March in the last results presentation that we were looking to provide an 84 megawatt DC or 67 megawatt AC solution for Hurdekaluk. And at that point, we were going to have to apply for a license for that plant. But obviously, if the gazetting of the 100 megawatt threshold is suitable, then we won't have to apply for a license, and that removes one of the significant critical path items for that project. So just as that, using that as an example, I think you can see that the potential for energy intensive users to gain self-generation or procure generation from entities that are not just ESCOM is potentially significant. And in terms of pipeline, so I just mentioned the one opportunity that we're pressing ahead with in Hurdekaluk. But beyond that, I think we mentioned in March as well that we have a pipeline of around 250 megawatts at the moment in our sector in particular, in the mining sector. And there's a huge potential shortfall in that sector or potential opportunity. There's a 2.5 gigawatt list of potential projects. And so hopefully we will be able to secure a decent proportion of that, particularly in light of that rise in the threshold from 1 megawatt to 100 megawatts.
Thank you.
Our next question is a follow-up question from Patrick Mann of Bank of America.
Hi, thanks for the follow-up. I just wanted to ask, did you say there was a second Transnet shutdown coming down in July? And then just if, you know, if it sounds like a lot of the cable theft vandalism occurred during the initial shutdown in January. So are there kind of mitigating factors being taken into account this time so that, you know, possibly it's less disruptive second time around? I just wanted to check on that.
Patrick, yeah. So the shut, if I'm not mistaken, is in the third week of July. And that's the normal period where we normally have the shuts during this time of the year. And yeah, I think lessons learned during the January shut, we as an industry will definitely make known to TFR that we do expect a better outcome of that situation. So I'm pretty sure that the security will be bolstered for this. And also, to the extent that you can put rolling stock in places where it can be better controlled or watched over, I think will definitely be a focus to not try to have all of that damage again.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question is from Dion Buerta of Fairtree.
The opportunity. I just have two questions relating to disposals. Firstly, are there any commercial to ECC that could prohibit the sale if TFR would not perform? So if you have to keep diverting export volumes to the local market. And then secondly, if you could just update us on the status of where you are with Yupan and the process, and if there's been any change in thoughts with regards to the assets. Thanks.
Uh, So you broke up a bit there. I don't know whether I got all the question, but the last part I got. So in the ECC, there's no conditions in the contract conditional on securing either Eskom contracts or on anything associated with Transnet at this stage on the sales agreement. So the only condition outstanding is the Section 11 that we require. And then Leupon, nothing has changed. We remember previously we said we want to sell the assets as the package, but that unfortunately didn't pan out. So we now separately are running with the Leupon process to dispose of Leupon, but fundamentally and nothing has changed on that front.
Would you expect, could we get a further updated results, or what do you think the timeline is for Leupon?
As I said, we hope to conclude a sales agreement by the second half of this year.
Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, just one final reminder. If anyone else would like to ask a question, you are welcome to press star and then one. We will pause a moment to see if you have any further questions. It seems we have no further questions on the lines. I would like to hand back to Mzila for closing comments.
Thank you very much for that. And thank you very much to everyone for your continued interest in Exxaro, as well as the participation this afternoon. And as mentioned, we will see each other again at the results, which will be on the 12th of August, 2021. So until then, please look after yourselves and be safe. Thank you very much. Thanks to the Exxaro team. Well done.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.